So first things first, James, how are you?
I'm okay, man. Well, we've got a lot to get into today, I'm sure, because it's been a lot's happened since the last time we spoke, dude. But today, I'm good. Thankfully. How about you, man?
That's very good to hear. You can only, I mean, the past is difficult, the future is unsure, but you can only focus on today, I suppose.
100%. Yeah.
And there is a lot to talk about. So let's kind of start where we ended last time, because the last time you were bringing out an album, Make Anger Great Again, and it all looked well, sunny skies, it seemed.
Yeah.
And then a lot of stuff happened. What was the first thing that kind of the first obstacle you encountered? Was it the release of the album? Because I don't know the timeline exactly.
Yeah, it was very bittersweet, as you very eloquently put it. It was the album came out first, and the first obstacle was the YouTube took the first single for The Power. A song called The Power was the first single. They took it down after one day. They said that
Okay.
it contained shocking content. It had like protest footage. It's a very political album, talking about all the stuff that was happening at the
Sure.
time. Obviously, it came out in a lockdown, so it was quite a hot period at that point, you know. And they took it down after one day. I then immediately got demonetized on
Okay.
YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and everything else. And I couldn't run any boosted posts. So obviously, I'm in the middle of a promo campaign promoting an album in a lockdown, so I can't perform live. So I'm doing it all in the house, you know. And as best I can on the internet. And yeah, I couldn't do any boosted posts, any adverts. My single was off YouTube, and then I got shadow banned on everything, because the only way I could get anybody to look at the video, because I YouTube did eventually put it back online after a few days. I had an argument with them, and they put it back on condition that I couldn't promote it, I couldn't boost it or advertise it.
Okay.
So what I did instead was every time Donald Trump tweeted, I would reply with, "Make anger great again," link to the video. And obviously, Donald Trump tweets every 2 seconds, right? So that got a lot of hits. So I got like 17,000 plays on a video that didn't exist on YouTube as such. So that was kind of fun, you know? But all that did then was that just got me flagged up with the algorithms on the platforms that thought I was a Donald Trump nut. So I got shadow banned. And I'm still shadow banned now 3 years later. So I've got like 300,000 followers on Twitter, which it was an audience I built up over a long period of time
Sure.
organically. It was a great platform for me, Twitter. And now whenever I tweet, like literally three people see it. It's the same on Facebook, Instagram, everything. So I've been completely deplatformed. So I would say that was obstacle number one.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit, because I do find it very interesting, and because you the idea of free speech has risen up again. People are talking about it in very in many contexts, I suppose. Did they ever tell you why it wasn't allowed, especially the power that's song specifically? Did they kind of give you an indication as to why it wasn't allowed?
Yeah, I didn't really believe it because they said initially it was flagged for shocking content, but I mean, it was a video that was made in the lockdown. So the idea was to have a band in a warehouse and do a rock and roll video. Obviously, I couldn't do that because everywhere was
Sure.
closed and, with social distancing. So it was just me in an abandoned house that was like next to my house at that time, filming it. And then we cut it with protest footage, which mostly came from within YouTube. And we were very careful to not have anything that looked like it was violent or anything like that. It was just all about people power rising up, all that sort of stuff. And they just said that they didn't like the sentiment of the video. They thought it was insightful. It wasn't a good timing, obviously, in a lockdown. And there's a U.S. election coming up in a few weeks, and there's all the Black Lives Matter protests and all the anti-vaccination stuff. And they just thought it wasn't the right time. And one of the clips in particular that they didn't like was there was a clip of the Colston statue in Bristol being torn down. There was a statue of a slave owner, and in a protest, they just decided to tear it down and chuck it in the river, which I thought was awesome, right? So there's a little bit of footage of that, which was all over the mainstream news. And they said that in particular, we don't want that on YouTube. So,
Because that's
but
crazy to imagine that,
yeah.
as you mentioned, I'm on YouTube way too much, and I watch things about serial killers, there's so much disturbing stuff on YouTube. So it's such a crazy thing to think
Yeah,
that
that's why
the
I didn't
music
believe
is
it.
too, yeah.
I didn't believe it. I thought that probably had more to do with the words, I think, because Twitter and Facebook had an issue with the words, not particularly of that song in general, but I mean, just the things I was posting and, you know, the other songs on the record as well. And the name of the album, Make Anger Great Again, for an algorithm, that's just target number one, isn't it? You know, I've got three of the four bad words, you know what I mean? So, I mean, even though it was meant as a satire and was meant to be, I was taking a dig at Donald Trump. The algorithm, there's no context anymore. So this is sort of censorship by algorithm, really. So every time I post now, it just back pages me. So that was difficult, man.
But that's such an interesting point you make, because we live in a time where algorithms are so important, and especially in the promotion of music, as you mentioned, social media is up there. I can see it now. Labels are focusing their attention on social media a lot more, and you are independent. But the role of social media is just, it can be understated. So being denied to promote your album, when did that feeling come to you to think, well, I'm not done with this album, they're trying to, I can't promote it the way I want to? Obviously you couldn't play live at the time. When was that decision made, well, I still want to do this album justice and get it to people in any shape or form that I can?
That's still kind of going on now.
Okay.
I mean I was very lucky that 3 weeks after the album came out, my book Noise Damage came out, which was my autobiography, and that did really well. It was picked up really well in all the press. It went to number one in three different categories on Amazon.
Amazing.
It was the second best-selling rock biography after Roger Daltrey. Okay. So that kind of took, that just went like beginner's luck, I guess, you know what I mean? It's my first book. I'd never written before, and it just did really well. Caught me completely by surprise. So I think because the album had been such a struggle, and then like a few weeks later, the book was just flying, I just kind of rode with that, you know what I mean? I just kind of like focused more on the book and thought, like, let's not lose this opportunity of, you know, this rare spark of success, you know what I mean? Which doesn't happen very often in this business. So so the book kind of took precedent then, pretty much until the next year, like 2021, that would have been. And I think I just made a decision with the album, because every time I posted about it on social media, which was still all you could do in 2021, you know, for a few months, every time I posted about it, nobody saw it. So I just thought, well, it's a really good album that I'm really proud of. I think it's still just as relevant now as it was back then, probably more so. So I'm just gonna park it up and see how this whole pandemic thing plays out. And, you know, I'll just keep myself busy in the meantime. So, I mean, I had lots of stuff to do. I did a lot of live streams. I did a lot of book readings and stuff like that. Tons of promo. And the book had a resurgence then as well when it was released in America and Canada in March 2021, I think. So there was a whole new promo cycle for that. So I was quite busy until the end of the lockdown with the book, pretty much.
Oh, that's amazing to hear. And I hear you're writing the follow-up already.
Yeah. This one's been a little bit tougher. I mean, Noise Damage I wrote in 2 months, the whole thing start to finish, which I think is probably a record for any book. because I didn't know I was writing a book at the time. To me, it's pretty easy because I'm just writing about myself, you know, in chronological order. It's pretty easy, right?
Kind of journaling in a journaling
fashion. Yeah, because at the time, that's what it was. It was for me, really. You know, my band had just broken up, my band Kashira. I didn't really know what I was doing with my life. It was like an existential crisis point, you know what I mean? So I was just kind of, I was getting everything I'd done so far down out of my head on the paper to kind of close the chapter on it. For me, really. If I had any idea that it was going to be published in a book form, I probably wouldn't have slagged half as many people off as I did. I would have gone a lot easier on people and probably not been as honest as I did. But maybe that was part of the appeal, you know?
Sure.
So, and then, yeah, I'm doing my second one now. So, I mean, I like, because I didn't know it was going to get published, and it did get published. And now it's on the bookshelves of my local bookshop in Cardiff. And off the back of the success of that, I got a book deal to do a second book, which is a lot harder because now I'm aware that I'm writing a book. So I'm trying to kind of like, oh, is this good? Is that like Noise Damage? Is that too harsh? You know, and it's taken forever, man.
No, but it's an interesting process. And then, it's amazing that the first one does so well that you can do another one. I mean, that's not not everybody gets that chance. So it's really
true.
Cool that
I know. I know so many authors who like go to like literary university college or whatever, you know what I mean? They study all their life to be a writer, and they've written gazillions of books, and it's their passion and their craft, and they just can't get a deal, you know what I mean? They can't get anything published. A bit like very much like my journey in music, you know what I mean? And then I write a book in 2 months, just full of swear words, talking about myself, and I get it fucking published, and it goes to number one. So, you know, it's like I'm aware that for many people, they would consider me to be exceptionally lucky, and I should be very happy to be even able to write a second book. Somebody's paid me to write another book of me just ranting about whatever I like, you know, basically. So that's, yeah, I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, don't sell yourself short. Last time we spoke, we talked about a lot about drive and work ethic, I think, and
Right.
that's something that you show a lot as well. Like for
Yes.
everybody, if your band breaks up, you can just quit music forever and just do a normal job. But
Right.
you decided to continue, and even with all the hardships you've faced in the past 2 years, I mean, I'm sure there were doubts and difficult moments, but you're still here and you're still going. So.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's kind of, in a way, it is kind of what keeps me sane. Really, you know, it is having something to focus on. It's the work, whether it's music or books. So I do a podcast now myself as
Sure.
well. And I think just having something to be interested in, and an ambition and a target to go for, kind of gives you a reason to get out of bed in the morning, doesn't it? It gives you a purpose, and it gives you a bit
Definitely.
of, you know, and it gives you a bit of self-esteem when you get that achievement as well, something to be proud of, something to aim for and shoot for. So for me, I think actually when I look back, these are the things that have actually kept me from, you know, self-destruction, or you know, or just lying on the couch watching, you know, Family Guy all day.
But there, and then we have to get into some of the less fun stuff. But I believe in May of 2022, your father passed away, if I'm not mistaken.
He did, yeah. It was the 30th of May, 2022, which was last year. God, it feels like 10 years ago already, because it's been such a tough year, man. I mean, he was ill before the lockdown. He got it, because I
Okay.
mentioned it in the book, which I wrote in 2019. He was diagnosed with leukemia, but he kind of smashed that. He had it, and then it went, and it never came back. And then he had esophageal cancer all through 2020 in the lockdown, which is quite a heavy one.
Wow.
So that was really tough, because we're in a lockdown, you know, social distancing, you know, masks. I couldn't give my mum a
Definitely, yeah.
hug. We couldn't visit him in hospital or anything like that. It was really tough.
Wow.
Plus, I had it was, you know, bittersweet. So I had this album coming out, and then the book doing well. But the album came out the same week that my dad was in hospital having his operation. So it was difficult, because online I'm doing all these kind of launch parties and things like that, doing the promo. But behind the scenes, it was a very, very difficult year. And he smashed that as well. And then we came out of the lockdown. Everything was going good. I put a new band together to perform the album, to try and resuscitate that. And we had a UK tour, a European tour, and everything was good. My dad had been out of his operation for about a year at that point. And then I got back from holiday, and he told me that he'd been given 6 months with brain
Oh,
cancer.
wow.
So immediately cancelled the tour, told the band, look, sorry, boys, you know, all these rehearsals and everything, I can't do it. I've got to be home for my family, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the next 6 months then, you know. So I mean, that was yeah, so that takes us like 2020, 2021, and 2022, you know, right up until, yeah, the middle of 2022. And obviously, you know, it takes a few months to wrap your head around the loss of a parent, or the loss of, you know, any you know, close family member. So yeah, for most of last year, I was pretty much either involved in his illness and the care, or dealing with, you know, the loss. So last year was tough. It was set up to be, much like 2020, it was set up to be a good year, you know, with a new band and a tour and getting back out there after lockdown. And then no, it was probably one of the toughest years of my life, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and it's not like those emotions go away after a year. It's something that will stay with you for a long, long time, forever, pretty much. So, no,
Every
that's a
day, yeah,
very
every day.
and then there's also you've been accosted or assaulted by a bunch of police.
Yeah.
Play. I have to say it correctly, because I did read the news article.
You got to get the legal terms right, yeah.
Yeah, but
The
you were
term is
saying that they were
allegedly.
plainclothes officers. They kind of
Yeah.
mishandled you in a stop and search, I believe. Have you heard anything
Yes.
about how to? Because obviously that's traumatic, and that's on top of all the other things you were already dealing with.
Yeah. It was very unwelcome, to be honest, man. I could have done without it, because as you mentioned, you know, I mean, it's been an intense few years for various reasons, and then, you know, losing my father, and it was quite a cruel last few months that he had, that I was very close to as well. You know, cancer is awful, as anyone who's been close to it will know. So it was difficult, man. I mean, I was very traumatized by not his passing. His passing was almost kind of a relief by the end, because he was so bad. I was traumatized by the journey of it, and it took a few months to really start to get my head around things. Obviously, you know, I still had to work and everything, and
right.
I'm an entertainer, so I got to put on a smiley face and everything, you know. So yeah, we were heading towards Christmas, and I was driving back from Cardiff, and I pulled over to text my girlfriend to say, look, they've closed all the roads because of like heavy rain. I'm going to be a little bit late. And then these three guys just piled into my car with like black hoods up, no uniforms. I just thought I was being robbed, basically.
Right.
They kind of put my arms around my back. They kept telling me to get out of the car. The one guy took my phone, punched me in the face, took my car keys.
Wow.
And they had like a little kind of like what I would call a boy racer car next to us, you know, next to my car. It wasn't a police car or anything. So there was nothing about this that said police. So I wouldn't get out the car. I started screaming for help. Nobody came. They mashed up my hand and I was punched in the face and everything. And they took me to a station, put me in the back of his car, which I still didn't think was a police car. Took me for a little drive around town and everything. I'm shitting myself thinking,
right.
They've just stolen my car and my guitars and my phone and everything. Like, what do they want with me? Where are they taking me? You know, what's happening next? So I'm terrified, man. They took me to a station, full strip search, cavity search, all that business.
Wow.
Looking for drugs. And then they let me go. And wrong place, wrong time, you know. All the best was pretty much the way it went. So, that was pretty intense, because I mean, obviously, if a police officer rolls up and says, hey, you know, we're stopping you for a stop and search, you kind of know what you're dealing with at that point, and you respond, you know, in however you respond. But I mean, you know, when you think that like you're just being robbed, three guys in black hoods just jumping in your
yes.
car, start punching you in the face, you just, you know, you go into survival mode, you know what I mean? So that was pretty intense, man. And we've had an internal investigation. I've got a lawyer handling it and everything. That took about 4 months. And in the end, they got off with it because they said they did it in self-defense, which is pretty comical when you think that I'm 5'4". And, you know, skin and bone, in a seatbelt, in a driver's seat. I didn't even see them coming, you know what I mean? I had both my arms restrained before they started punching. So we've escalated it now to an independent review. And my lawyer is mad keen to go all the way with it, basically. So it was it was front page news over here in Wales. So, I mean, everything I've said there is kind of consistent with the statement that went out to the press. Obviously, it's all alleged at this point.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I was really ill after that, man. I mean, like that combined with the, you know, everything I've been through with my father a few months previous to that, I had this kind of, like a week after the police thing, I had this really bizarre mystery illness, which lasted for about 6 months, where I had like migraines and like light sensitivity and vertigo and sickness and just exhaustion and fatigue and it, like everything. It was so bizarre. Like they tested my heart. I had brain scan. I had blood scans. They couldn't find anything. And in the end, they said it must be PTSD, just like nervous system.
Stress.
You know what I mean? Stress, just like from like obviously having to keep it together, caring for my dad. Before that, there was the lockdown, trying to release an album, getting shadow banned and censored and all that stuff. Then losing my dad and then the police thing. So I think like, yeah, it would make sense that my nervous system is just out of hammering.
Right.
And, I just couldn't function for like half of this year, to be honest, man. So it's like the dramas keep rolling. It's been like a year. When I look back at the past 3 years, it's been so much good stuff. You know what I mean? Like the album, the book, the new band, and the second book coming out, and you know, a new release, which hopefully we'll get to talk about coming up as well. But it's just been so much heavy drama as well, like a global pandemic, the loss of my father, getting beaten up by the police. It's like,
right.
And it was, you know, organized crime squad. You know what I mean? These were like big dudes, you know? So, I mean, I think I'm ready to write book three already.
Yeah, you've got plenty of material or experience.
Yeah.
And whenever I hear the words internal investigation, I know it's not going to end up anywhere. It's you see this so many times. It's internal investigation. Oh yeah, we didn't find anything. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you mentioned. You mentioned kind of having to put on that face, because it feels so schizophrenic those past 3 years, where on the one hand you had all these beautiful moments, but then all these difficult moments peppered through it.
Yes. Difficult, man.
when that happens, was there a moment that you thought, okay, now I feel like I have the motivation again, and I feel like I should start working on these songs and figure out a way, and ultimately that would be an acoustic version of some of the songs. But when did that kind of happen for you?
Not long ago, man. I mean, that illness lingered because we couldn't find what it was, you know. So I was going back and forth with different scans and stuff. And every time I felt a little bit better and I'd go up for a run or something like that, I'd just be in bed again for 3 days. I would have these brutal panic attacks, which would just grip me. I'd be on the sofa watching telly and I would just be absolutely gripped by terror, and I'd have to go and lie down in a dark room.
Oh, wow.
Bizarre. Never had panic attacks or anxiety disorder ever before in my life. So weird. And it just kept lingering. It just would not go away, like right up until probably about like May time, I think. So not long ago, man.
Right.
To be honest, I've only been out the woods for like a month and a half, something like that.
Okay. What role did music play in those 6 months? Did you listen to a lot of music? Did you play even at home? Or how did you kind of, was it very much in bed a lot, as you mentioned? Yeah. How did you navigate kind of those couple of months or those 6 months?
Well, music has always been my go-to, man. You know, I talked about this in the last book, how much music has always saved me from, you know, my lowest points and pulled me up and been my friend through those things. And I think that's going to be the way until the end, man, you know, because, yeah, just like being inspired, like listening to loads of music and watching videos and stuff like that, and doing a lot of reading and kind of, in a way, it was kind of nice because it gave me the opportunity as someone who is normally so driven and so productive and creates a lot, gave me the ability to, against my will, it was kind of imposed that I could actually be a fan again and just slow down and stay in bed, because I didn't have a choice, you know what I mean? So I had to start listening to music and consuming new stuff and getting inspired and excited again. And it really did help me. It gave me a light at the tunnel, the end of the tunnel to aim for, you know what I mean? To think like, yeah, sure. I want to get back out there. You know, I want to get out there and play some shows with a band and get some new music out. That's always the thing that kind of helps me through my lowest points.
Making acoustic versions then of these tracks that you already released, what I always find interesting when it comes to acoustic versions, and your voice sounds really good, I would say, on the album.
Thanks, man.
And because there are no heavy distorted guitars, you can hear your voice a little bit clearer as well. And it's almost like you're more exposed, you're more vulnerable. Yeah. What is your experience of playing acoustic songs, and what was the approach in doing these particular songs?
Well, it was exactly as you just described. Yeah, there's nothing to hide behind when you haven't got like walls of fuzzy guitars and drum kits. You've actually got to be able to like get the words right and sing a tune, you know. So it's interesting. I mean, I've done a lot of acoustic stuff previously because I've done a lot of different music over the years, you know. Done solo tours, acoustic and stuff. So I'm quite comfortable with acoustic. But taking these songs, these heavy songs with a lot of screaming and shouting and stuff, and doing them acoustic was really interesting. And I think we pulled it off, man. I mean, like, it's got the full band on there, you know, percussion and bass and two guitars and everything. And I think we managed to put a twist on those songs in a way that I think holds its own ground, I think, you know. I think they're cool. I enjoy listening to them. And I'm really looking forward to getting out and playing. Me and the guitar player and the Underdogs, Jack Davis, are doing our first acoustic gig next week in Swansea. In a place called the Bunkhouse. So yeah, we're super stoked for that. And then we're actually gigging full band. We're actually finally getting out there, unless anything tragic happens to me in the meantime. We're finally getting back out there and playing some full band shows. Yeah, I mean, I probably tempted fate now. I'm probably going to lose a leg or something. So yeah, like the acoustic thing was fun, man. It was something different, and it was a way to kind of like keep those songs alive a little bit, because like I said, you know, they are essentially 2 years old now since the album came out, but so much has happened and the album kind of got neglected and I couldn't promote it. So I feel like it needs a second shot in the arm. And I thought, rather than do a re-release or something like that, I would do an acoustic thing, because at least it's something different. It's a different angle for the band. It's something completely novelty for, you know, the catalog, the Spotify stream. So I thought, well, yeah, let's do that and put it out. So Make Acoustic Great Again is coming out on August the 4th, just in 3 weeks' time, on all digital only, so it's on all digital platforms. And then, yeah, like the band then is going to be doing full band gigs from August the 13th. We've got a headline show in our hometown in Newport, and then we're playing a Beautiful Days Festival in Devon, like literally the week after, and I'm doing some a bunch of talks and stuff like that as well. So it looks as if we're finally over the hill, man. You know, we're finally getting out there.
I quickly want to give a shout out to your guitarist, Jack Davis, you said?
Yes, yeah.
Because listening to the album, playing some of the things on electric is a little bit easier than playing those things on acoustic. So a big shout
Oh
out
yeah.
to him. I think
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
on Outrageous, the guitar solo to pull that off and to make it sound
Right.
like that, it's very impressive. So shout out to him.
Jack is a beast. Jack is a beast, man. Yeah, Jack's a good dude. And he has a penchant for all things alcoholic and loud. So that's always good to have in a band.
But then I did want to jump into one specific song, kind of Solace in Sickness. Now I don't know what the intention behind the song was, but it feels like it's very applicable to what you've been through the past years. So kind of the main sentiment, kind of I want to feel something real. Now you've had that chance the last few years.
Oh yeah.
You've been feeling a lot of things, so kind of having gone
Yes.
through that. Was it what, looking back? How do I phrase this correctly? Was it what you hoped for? Was it the kind of the idea of feeling what real life is about, in a sense?
With what in life in general, or with regards to the song?
No, the kind of life in general, because the well, you can apply it. Like I said, I don't know the exact meaning of the song, but that idea of I want to feel something real, I want to feel, like those
Yeah.
true emotions. Now, obviously, you
Yeah.
had those true emotions the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not always fun to experience those emotions. So looking back now, how do you look back at it now, feeling what you felt in the past couple of years? I know it's
Yeah,
I'm gonna cut this up a little bit. It's a little bit too vague, but.
that's cool. Yeah, well, that song was kind of like it was more about the obsession that with happiness that we have at the moment, where everyone's striving to be happy, and that's the only emotion that we seem to value in our society. And what I'm saying in the song is that it's the whole roller coaster of emotions, the ups and the downs. I mean, that is it's sometimes in your deepest, in your darkest moments when you learn the biggest lessons and have the biggest breakthroughs and make the biggest changes in your life that you look back at it then as like, you know, the kind of the best thing that ever happened to you. You know what I mean? So that song is kind of like a celebration of the whole roster of the human experience. And I think, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, as I look back over the past 2 years, I've experienced as low as you can get, and also some really beautiful moments as well. And I've had to challenge myself and overcome a lot and dig deep, you know, physically and mentally to overcome, you know, illness and grief and, you know, trauma, as well as, you know, some crazy breakthroughs in my life, like becoming a best-selling author for a book I didn't even know I was writing, you know. So yeah, man, I mean, it's bittersweet. It is bittersweet. I'm glad to be out of it, to be honest, because I do just want to get back on the saddle and crack on and play some shows and have some good times and go for some adventures with my boys, you know. But yeah, it's been intense. It's been intense.
Well, one last question then, because with what you mentioned, is there one lesson that you've learned either from the passing of your father, from the PTSD, from being blacklisted on social media? Is there anything that you kind of took away from those dark moments that you can kind of look at now and think, okay, but actually in the long run it will help me, or in the long run I've learned from this and
Yeah.
now I can navigate it better?
Yeah. I think just keep on going. You know, just don't give up. Just keep on going. And I think that's why having a passion in your life like art, you know, it could be a career, or it could be having children, or it could be your relationship or health and fitness. Having something in your life that means more to you than giving up and surrendering to the fear, I think is very important, you know. So for me, music has always been that, you know. It's I don't think I would have had the anchor that I've needed through everything that I've been through the past few years if it wasn't for my love of music and being involved in music. So I'm eternally grateful for that. So I think the lesson would be, yeah, just don't give up, man. Just find what is more important to you than giving up and surrendering. Hone in on that and just don't give up one day at a time, you know.
I think that's great advice. So on those words, Jamie, thank you, James, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me again, and being so honest about your story. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I love the show. You always do a great interview. So thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you again.